The following program may contain content that your kids would love to hear, but you may not want them to.
We interrupt this program for no reason. Had there been a reason, you'd have been asked to go along with it and perhaps even take off your pants. But there is no reason, so now we return you to the program.
Okay, here we go.
Listening to Frank Capella.
And who's that?
Godfather of internet radio broadcasting. He's the bard of broadcasting. He's the third man and the vegetable man. He's me, Frank Atolo, the man whose name adorns the title of the show. Wake up! It's night! Time for the blog, the podcast, the holla blog, the hallelujah trail, the hallelujah podcast, the hot blog, hog blog, replenish your precious bodily fluids and everything the heck else. Jay Isso is here. You're going to learn stuff. And I'm going to knock my, oh my God, I'm going to make noise. And I'm going to turn the entire broadcasting world upside down. Listen, the day's coming. Hold on. Stay with us. Ice cap to ice cap, from Hamlet to city, from Othello and into every bordello. You know, I think that after the recent technical glitch, the debacle, I was just to say debacle. It seems like it should be said debacle, not debacle. But now that I have found my, I found my New York Times Everyday Reader's Dictionary of Misunderstood, Misused, and Mispronounced Words. And you know, I identify with that because I think that I am misunderstood, misused, and mispronounced. So don't. From ice cap to ice cap. Yes. So I'm here and you're here and we're going to have a guest today. I'm not just going to, you know, knock through it and go through my drum roll deal, or give you various examples of things I say through YouTube, which is still free for most of us. But I'm here, and my name is Frank Atoll, man's name adorns the title of the show. But in the tech problems that were going on, which knocked us off a couple of weeks through the year, beginning of the year, as well as some other things knocked us off, but you know, we're resilient. We come, this isn't just a, this is a resilient broadcast. And we came back and we are back. And it's Thursday. Like, you know, if I did a show every day, it would be my entire life because that's too much already. How do you guys do it every day? I know how they do it every day. Don't tell me. I know, cause I used to do, but you know, you do a show on radio and if it has music or if it has callers, you know, 2-3 hours goes really quickly. And then you have all these commercials. You have, So what I'm saying to you is that I think I finally got the things that have annoyed me about the technical glitches together. And I don't know how. I don't know how I didn't see them before. And suddenly I was like, hey, why don't I do this? You know, there's a book called Bling. I think it's Bling. I don't remember the author. Where it expresses the fact that our minds work in a way that the right answer does come along. It's the first thing that comes along. And there's another thing, there's another saying like that, but I'm not going into that right now because I forgot that saying. But anyway, I am the Bard of Broadcasting and the Godfather of Internet Radio. Speaking of Internet Radio, Jay Izzo, which I'm going to find out why he spells his name like this and where he comes from in this world or what family. I've never seen a name that's spelled this way when it's pronounced that way. Unless I'm pronouncing it wrong. We'll find out. He's the internet doctor. And if you are still wondering, if you're sitting around, at least I think, because I was only on the air with him. I was on the TV air. TV air. Didn't that sound French? The TV air. I was on the TV air. The TV broadcasting there with the Jigzoid, Jigzoid, Jasmine, Joyd, whatever his name is, James the Jigoid Jaguar there. And that's where I met Jay. And I said, Jay, you got to be on my show. And he said, yeah, fine, because we hit it off. We clicked. And it's odd because I think we're a unity of opposites. But he's going to tell us things that I don't even know because I didn't read. I didn't do a lot of work. I like to do this fresh when I interview someone. Whether they've written a book or they went to a theater to perform, whether they're actors, singers, painters, writers, whatever. Jay, and I think you'll find Jay, he's very entertaining and he's into this empowerment thing. You know, it's a kind of a motivational thing. I've had some motivational people. You know what's funny? I forgot his name. Steve something Olsher. I think it's Steve Olsher or Olsher. Something like that. I should have taken one of those courses, memory courses, and self-help motivated memory. And, you know, I had Steve on the show like twice, and I had no idea. It was like, oh, I can't be on like that long. I'm like, why? You're not motivated. Why don't you be? Can't you be on? We go here. I talk sometimes. I have no guests. I come on, and I'm 2 hours later. I'm saying goodbye. and I could still go some. Once did a five-hour show completely with nothing. And who knows who listened. But in any event, in all events, and certainly this event, Jay, as a motivational speaker, I'm sure he'll be able to talk. Sound like a talker. And if he's a motivational speaker, you know he can talk. He's not the kind of guy people pay to hear him motivate him. I think they do. How else does he make a living? We're going to find out all these things when he's on. So why am I asking completely out in the air? Why don't I just tell you this? That, you know to go to buy the books. You know to go to buy the books. Say, go to buy the books. Hey, why don't you go to buy the books? So you go to Amazon and you buy the books. So you go to Cotolo. See, Teoello. There's no other Cotolo on Amazon. Isn't that something? There's a Cotolo, a weird, who knows where this guy comes from. And I know he's not part of my bloodline unless it goes back to, billions of years. I don't know. But his name is, Emil Cotolo. And I have no idea where he came. I said, how could you be a Cotolo? And I know you're going like, why? Doesn't he look like it? Doesn't he? No. First of all, he's another race, all right? And he's an African-American, and he lives somewhere in Africa. No, America, Africa, America. There is no Africa, America. He lives in Africa somewhere. And this is what's amazing, one of the amazing things about Facebook. The other things are all useless. But... And then how do you get the name Cotolo? I asked him, and of course he says, it's a weird person. I don't know why he's on Facebook. The weirdest people are on Facebook. I know I'm a weird person. I'm saying I know that other people are looking going, and they go, you're weird. I know that. And I know I'm weird, but I mean, the people in strangest areas, you just don't think that there'd be somewhere in Africa, there's a little village somewhere. And the people who live in this town where they still go to the stream for water, how do I know that? I don't know that. But I know that this guy is not a product of urban civilization. Let's just put it that way. He's somewhere in, I don't know. But what is he doing running around with the name? He even spells it with the three O's. And I don't know. I said, how could you be a Cotolo? How are we related? And he goes, he doesn't know. And I don't know how he sounds because he doesn't talk. He just writes little, comments and stuff. And I don't go to Facebook a lot anymore anyway, so I don't see him. But of all the Cotolos, and if you go to Amazon, now I know one thing. He's not a writer, so you can't mistake his books for my books. We're going to talk about, Jay writes books too. Jay is so. I know, I'm going to go into that. But, go to Amazon and get the books. The books, you gotta, the books are good for you. They're good books. And there's a Twitter feed about romance novels that's really into Sweet Shepherd. And it's more than, I don't know. You decide what, I hate talk saying, here's what this book is about. I don't like when people ask me that. And I think a lot of writers don't. Speaking of a lot of writers, the PJ Salinger. Is there a PJ Salinger? I think J.R. Salinger. Is it J.R. Salinger? That movie, Rebel, now I don't know what it is. Rebel in the Rye. That's it. Rebel in the Rye. Because it's about J.D. Salinger who wrote Catcher in the Rye. It's Rebel in the Rye. I think it has to do with before he wrote the book and after he wrote the book, which would be his life, I guess. That would cover his life. He's known for a book. So here's a movie about the before he wrote the book and after he wrote the book. I guess that covers it all. He only died a couple of years ago, but he's a mysterious, disappearing, lonely, not lonely. I don't know if he was lonely. I didn't know him. Loner writer who did not write many. I think that's the only book he wrote, but he wrote a lot of short stories and stuff. I don't know. But I want to see this movie, and I'm mentioning it to you. So anybody who sees it and knows about it or saw it or reviews it for me, call me up on Skype or write to me, fcotolo@yahoo.com. And then what I'll do is if you want to get on, you get on Skype, you can come on the show and review it for me. That goes for anyone else, but I have to pick the movie. I don't want people coming on this show, and I'm talking to them. They go, I went to give you the new Star Wars, The Last Jedi, the last peanut butter and Jedi. I don't want that. There's going to be so much. We don't want to give more the advertisement and acknowledgement and exposure to things that are getting all the exposure. That's one thing about being the godfather of internet radio and broadcasting, the Bard of Broadcasting, is when I do this show, I don't want to be the guy who says, no, I'm going to talk about that big movie, the biggest movie of all time, just came out yesterday. Ooh, I don't want to talk about that. Everybody's talking about that. That makes this show moot. And one thing you don't want to do when you're on a talk show is have a moot talk show. You don't want to talk moot. So I try to go between the lines of various topics, and I don't stay so topical. Let me tell you another reason I don't stay topical. Although, you know, through the archives, you will find some shows that are topical, but they still look for different angles and different layers of curiosity inside those topics. And you can, of course, find and read. You can find, you can stream, and you can download the archives shows as far back as they go. The juicedtalk.com. You can go get them there. I'm like one of those guys, you know, those guys on TV with the pencil. A lot of guys did that. Johnny Carson used to do that. Just hold the pencil. I don't know why they do that. It was a prop, but I got this pencil here. Anyway, you can go and do that. And what was I saying? I was saying that this show is not a moot talk show. Even when we have if I had all the guests that wanted to be on this show, it would be so many people about what? I know they want to sell their books, but you know, that's why, and they want to sell their CDs and stuff, and it's very difficult. Then Jay is going to tell us ways, cause he's the internet doctor, and that doesn't mean that he fixes the internet when it's broke. It doesn't mean that. It means, I'm sure, that he's empowering people and telling people, inspiring people and telling them how they can make some kind of an impression, if not a living, with a website. Now that's darn important stuff, I think. I never figured it out. Maybe he could tell me too. I've been here since the beginning. And not the beginning of the internet. No, I didn't work for the government or what have you. But anyway, in any event, in all events, I want to mention also too that Savino Veritas is coming back. A new season begins October 26th. Tell you more about that next week. And then Tom Savino himself will be on this show sometime after that. And maybe we'll have the Three Amigos again. That will be me, Thomas Martin, and Thomas Savino. The Three Amigos, the original Three Amigos. Yes, three. I didn't say Bob. I wonder where that came from. Yes, three, Bob. Maybe you know where that might have come from originally? It might have come from Howdy Doody, the Howdy Doody show. Because his name was Buffalo Bob. I don't know why that was suddenly funny. I want to tell you about something I found here, though. Speaking of funny, because you know when I find these things, like I found, where is it? Like we talked about pain spray. I don't know if you listened to that show, but a while back, talked about pain spray, the miracle in the bottle. These are items that are actually sold. I'm not making these things up. If I were to make this show up or write it, it would take too much time out of my life, and I wouldn't do it. But I found this. I get this thing called the Value Pack in the mail. It's an envelope, and it's filled with advertisements. And they're thin strips of advertisement. Two sides, color. And that's it for stores, items you could buy, the kind of things that I don't know if anybody buys anymore through the mail, but you don't have to buy them through the mail because it tells you that you could get them in stores. You know what I got in store? I saw this thing in the middle of the night where you screw out, it's true, you screw out the wax of your ear, you screw it out with this, you put a thing in your ear, it looks like a drill, but it's plastic, and you put it, you don't puncture yourself, you just put it far as in as you can, and then you turn it one way or another, turn it up, and I mean turn because there's a little handle. You turn it to the right for the right ear, and then you put in another top, and then you turn it to the left for the left ear, and it screw this stuff out. This is way better than putting a tissue in your ear and Q-tips because you just got to rub and everything, and chances are you're going to pop that little baby in there. You don't want to do that. So I bought one of these things. They said, you know, only now on TV in the middle of the night. Only now. When you act now, you get two. You know, only got to pay for the second one. I love that. They say, if you act now, you can get two. You can, no, they say this. If you act now, you'll get one free, which you will pay for because of handling and whatever that handling. Handling. You know, well, there's somebody who wanted to be a handler. What do you want to do for a life? I want to be a handler. I want to be a handler. And when I was shipping things out, items, products, ship them out, I'll be a handler. And I get money for handling the products. So, because they charge you for handling, which is like, you're going to mail it to me, aren't you? To put it in a box and tie the box up or whatever, that's called handling. So, yeah, that's just another way to get some more money. But in this value pack where they had, and they have a coupon, they show you a restaurant, local restaurants advertise. Say you're 10% off if you spend $230 for lunch. I love that. 10% off for 200. Why is lunch costing $223? Why are you in a value pack advertising if your prices are that expensive? But I get this and I immediately took this out and I said, I love this. I love this because I love crazy items that have crazy names. This is called, here's what it says on the front. And there's a picture of a hand holding a little envelope with the name of the object, the product, it's an object, the product on it. And it says here, pick up Beano at your local retailer, save $3. Beano is the name of the product. B-E-A-N-O. So here's, and you know, you've got it, you immediately turn it over because you go, what the hell is Beano? Is that Beano? This is the spin-off Marx brother that never made it. Beano. B-E-A-N-O. What does this do? It's a package. 100. It says 100 on the bottom. So you turn it over. You go, save $3. Well, if you could save $3, what the hell does Beano cost? Which is the name of my new book, ladies and gentlemen. What the hell does Beano cost? Everyone. I mean, it sounds like the name of a pet, too. It says here, save $3, then there's Beano. Here, take Beano before meals. Oh, it's a supplement. It's a, like, take Beano, and it stops discomfort before it starts. So they're assuming that when you eat, you have, it doesn't say only for foods that you know disturb you. It just says, take Beano before meals. And stop discomfort. You know, it's got the R on top of, on the top of the last letter of the Beano. Just like internet doctor has the R. You said Jay has an R because he's registered and he's registered. It says here, Beano's enzyme breaks down complex carbohydrates, making gas, causing foods easier to digest. And then there's two asterisks, but I gotta really look closely to read this. Cause the asterisk, it's impossible to see what it says. It says, I know I'm away from the mic, but I gotta get to the light here. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. The product is not intended to diagnose something. Diagnose what? Diagnose, treat, care, or prevent disease. So here's this thing. Tells you, get this. Save $3. Get Beano. Take one. Either 100 in each package. Okay? And nothing, and then on the bottom it goes, but remember, nothing will happen. And we don't even guarantee you there's anything wrong with you or anything. So, listen to this. Think about the brilliance of this. You create a product. Excuse me. You create a product that does nothing. You sell it and say, do this. You don't really say it does anything. You say it'll break down complex carbohydrates. Now, nobody knows, really, how to break down common carbohydrates. Do they? Is anybody? Let me see a show of hands. Who knows? How do you break down a complex? I don't even know how to break down a simple carbohydrate. Do you run? Do you dance? Do you lift weights? So you create a product, you put it out there, you say, take it here, and think about it. If there's nothing wrong, I ate hot dogs all my life, then I'm having hot dogs and potatoes. So, but I'm going to take this Beano first in case the hot dogs are potatoes, which never upset me tonight, right? Because it's going to break down those complex carbohydrates because Lord knows there are, who even knows where there are a lot of people don't know where to find complex carbohydrates. I don't know. I know where to find simple carbohydrates, but once it starts getting complex, I got to tell you, I'm in the dark when it comes to searching for carbohydrates. And there's the Searching for Carbohydrates by Frank Cotullo. There's another book. We'll put it on the list. We have to write these books that we'll never live to write that we do. But we get the titles. But I love this Beano. And Beano, I just like Beano. So they have this product. You create this product. Goes, well, what are we going to call it? I don't know. Let's call it breakdown. Breakdown. Yeah. You don't want to eat something that says breakdown before you eat. Right. Complexio. Complexio. Or no, you can't call it Complexio. You can't mention this is these. And he goes, well, what are they? Well, they look like I don't know what they look like. There's no picture of them here. It just says 100 count. Take Beano before meals. And stop discomfort before it starts. You know, that actually could be two different thoughts, right? It could be take Beano before each meals and stop. That doesn't mean that because you take Beano, it'll stop discomfort, right? Wow. I'm telling you, you could dig down and find the lie in everything because in everything there is a lie. Anyway, if you see Beano out there, this is, and I'm not suggesting you buy this, and I'm not telling you, I'm not advertising it, I'm not condoning it, I'm not endorsing it. I mean, Beano, but I like the name, and it catches my eye. So whatever they did, they got my attention. I couldn't tell you right now, three other strips of advertising that were in that value pack. What products? What were there? I don't know. I don't know. But I'll always remember Beano. I Remember Beano by Frank Cotullo. My name is Frank Cotullo. Man's name is Don's the title of the show. What we're going to do is, as soon as we can, and that happens to be like right about now, is we're going to call on the Skype line the one, the only, Jay Izzo. And I'm going to, and when he gets here, what I'm going to do is I'm going to set, as usual. Now, remember, I fixed the the volumes and the volume and the recording and how it works. The settings, let's call them settings. I fixed the settings so we know that works. So it's going to take me as soon as he, burp, it'll go burp, and loud, and then they'll get on. And then it's according to the grade of his Skype. I'm not going to do a picture. So he's not wearing that big cowboy hat. I'm just going to talk. It doesn't matter to you anyway if it was a picture or whatever, right? It didn't matter. So, and then Jay and I are going to talk about many things. I don't even know all those things, but he's a good talker. He's a speaker. He's a motivational speaker. And, so I'm going to get him right now. What am I doing first? I'm going to put that window away, put this over here, and I'm going to call Jay, the inspirational Jay Izzo. It is light. Oh, his picture shows the big cowboy hat, the goatee, and hello. Oh, I can see you.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're not going to see me. I'm sorry.
Are we going to do, were we doing video or not video? I wasn't sure what we were doing.
Well, it doesn't matter. Nobody's watching. They're listening. if you're uncomfortable or if you want to like put your pajamas on or something, it's okay.
I'm just wearing a jacket. I'm actually in shorts, so
okay.
Get a shirt so that I can just feel better about myself.
Nobody will be watching. but I can see you. So
that's awesome.
So it's
awesome.
Between you and I. I mentioned a couple of people, but there's something that's been bothering me.
Sure.
You know, it's not a big thing. It's a stupid thing, but stupid things bother me now and then. Okay. And that's this. I knew an Izzo, I-Z-Z-O or E-Z-Z-O, but why is there a Z and then an S? And am I pronouncing it right if I say Izzo or is Izzo?
No, Izzo is an okay pronunciation. It's Hungarian.
Okay.
So if you think of Zsa Zsa Gabor, which was Z-S-A, Z-S-A.
Yes.
Right. So the ZSO, ZSO.
You know, I didn't think of Zsa Zsa when I looked at you. I didn't mean it that way.
At six feet five inches tall and 265 pounds, there's no mistaking that I'm not Zsa Zsa.
But I want to tell you this, though. I look at your Facebook page. I see your pages, and you don't frighten me as large as you are.
I'm pretty much a teddy bear. That other switch doesn't flip very often at all, so I don't worry about it too much.
What's the last time you punched someone? Can you remember?
I think the last time I had to deal with somebody was probably when I was bouncing or when I was bodyguarding.
You were bodyguarding and so we've got that too to go into, huh? Because you have you ever been sued? Don't those people get sued a lot?
No, you know what? Generally drunk people don't remember. That's what you typically find out, is they don't remember. They take a swing at you, and then I don't know that I've actually punched somebody, but you certainly had to wrestle them down, and sometimes you may have been a little rough,
You're a bouncer. I mean, listen to what they call you, bouncer.
Yeah. I had a day with Martina McBride, and I was her personal bodyguard. This was early in her career, and she came to Raleigh, North Carolina, and I remember when I was – she was my responsibility, and I remember the sheriff came up to me and said, we're about to do a signing where she's going to sign autographs. And he said, we're going to take her through the crowd. She's going to grab onto your belt. She's going to tuck her head. I just need you to, I don't care who's in front of you. I don't care if they're 9 or 92. I need you to run them over and just get her to where she needs to be.
Wow. That's great. It's a great job.
I said, yes, sir. And she's hearing all this, and Martina McBride, who's about 5'4" tall. So I'm a good foot plus taller than she is. And she tugs on the back of my shirt, and I said, yes, ma'am. And she said, you're really not going to hurt any of those people, are you? And I said, no, ma'am, I promise you I won't. I said, I'm a pretty big boy. I said, they generally will move. It'll be like the parting of the Red Sea by the time I get there.
And then you put her back in your pocket, right?
I did. I basically put her back in my pocket. She was so little. She was really one of the tiniest people I had ever been around. She was so little, but she was also so sweet. She was absolutely treasure to.
That's the kind of job. All right, enough about her. That's the kind of job. We're talking about you. It's about you, Jay. Not McFina McFoud or whatever. That's the kind of job where you, like, I couldn't show up my size and my, and go like, you know, I'd like to be. And then if they didn't hire me, I could say, hey, couldn't I say, hey, wait a second, you're why can't I have this job? Suppose I know jujitsu.
Yeah. I'll tell you what, some of the best guys ever had. I was actually, when I was at Washington State University and I was in grad school and I was also bouncing and also trying to do stand-up comedy too as well. I remember I was in grad school and I was in charge for a period of time of hiring our door people and our bartenders, because I bartended as well. And I remember that sometimes some of the smallest guys were actually my best guys. They really were because they were very skilled. They were very skilled at other things.
They knew the art of balance and imbalance.
Yeah, amazing. Right? Their core was so amazing, and they had all this other training that made them absolutely perfect. Because, you know, you're not really, the job wasn't, you know, a lot of people think that, oh, you know, you, I never hit anybody with my fists. It was really wrestling them down because they were out of control. And you know, most of your time is spent just getting people outside the door, because once you get people outside the door, it seems to be, it's pretty much over. And people don't understand it. I only remember really one major, major event where I went into about 8 tables with a guy. And I remember that one event pretty clearly. And to this day, because it felt like it was never going to end, because most of this stuff is over in 8 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
It literally is. 8 seconds is pretty much over. And I remember how long that one lasted and how exhausted you were because all of your energy is in there. So yeah, it's just, I have had a lot of crazy jobs.
Yeah, that's good. That's good. We haven't even talked about exactly what right. that's the, how you became the internet doctor, R Circle.
Yeah, the registered trademark is the internet doctor. There's a funny story to that, Frank.
Well, really, I want to hear the funny story, and so does the audience. Why don't you tell us? Jay is always here, like Zsa-Zsa. He's nothing like Zsa-Zsa Gabor, but his name does help you do it. It does help you understand Izzo, I-Z-S-O. Don't put two S's. Don't put two Z's. You're the, what does an internet doctor do? Forget about how you became it. We'll talk about that in a, after a while. Tell us what an internet,
that's a really great question. So, This all started because I was interested in the psychology of the internet and how businesses could bridge the gap between the internet and their business and be able to work with an online client, because they're slightly different in a lot of ways than working with a client face to face.
Now wait a minute, I'm going to stop you here and there and ask you questions so that we get this clear, because if I get it clear, because I'm not like my audience, they understand things. Sure. I have to comprehend in different fashion. Okay, right. So why did you, when you came to that decision right. and looked upon that, were you already like a little geek? Did you already have what was your relationship with the internet at that point that you decided?
I'm an early adopter of all sorts of things, and especially when it comes to technology and new technology. So I so strongly interested in the internet. And I mean, I was one of those people, like, when I had my first flip phone, you know, I couldn't wait when BlackBerry came out with their BlackBerry phone, which at one time BlackBerries were like the king
right.
of phones. And I remember having a Microsoft phone for a while. And then, you know, honestly, I've never had an iPhone, but I'm always an early adapter of phones and all sorts of technology. Well, mm-hmm. the internet came around. And I really studied how people were using the internet, and I really was interested.
Now, what point in the history of the internet is there? Because I mean, I'm dealing with over 20 years here with this crap.
Yeah, this is in the 90s, right?
So, yeah. Okay.
This is in the 90s. I really got some interest. I'm working at NC State, North Carolina State University, mm-hmm. and I'm working for the basketball program and the baseball program there, and we have internet access. And I found it so fascinating at that time. And then I left that job and was just doing some research, searching around. And I met a man by the name of Michael Russer, who was called Mr. Internet. And he did a lot of real estate work of internet and real estate. And I was studying the psychology of the user and how they were using it. And back in 1997, my wife owns a real estate company. Back in 1997, we became part of a website called bungalowhunter.com. And bungalowhunter.com showcased properties by taking interior photos and exterior photos of houses.
This is when it was still taking like an hour to load up a photo, right?
Oh, well, you know what? Okay, I'm an early adapter, though. So I've got that very first Sony 3. It had floppy drives, the 3 1/4-inch floppy drive.
Wow, floppy.
Put in there. And so you could take your photos. I mean, it wasn't even a megapixel. Okay. I mean, I don't think we were even at a 1 at that time yet. And so the reason why things took so long wasn't the size of the file. It was the slowness of the internet, because we were running like 14.4, maybe 33. I mean, we were not running very fast at all at that time.
Uh-huh.
If you remember, because everything was dial-up.
We hadn't even gotten
to DSL or anything like that. So anyway, I actually had a lady. This is a true story, because I was working with my wife in the real estate business at the time. And I actually had a lady who said to me, you know, nobody's ever going to buy a house on the internet. They're going to need us forever. You're wasting your time doing this. And wasn't 2 years later, I saw her sitting in a Barnes & Noble store, and she was out of the business. And I said, Sally, why are you – I haven't seen you in real estate. She goes, I quit. She goes, this whole internet thing is ridiculous, and I'm not going to learn it. And I saw a lot of people go on the wayside who were in all sorts of businesses, because once the internet came into being – and you know this so well, Frank, that when the internet came into being, a lot of people got so frustrated because they felt useless, and they didn't understand how to bridge themselves in a digital world, because that's what it was becoming. Mm-hmm. And so over the course of time, after this Mr. Internet thing, this guy, Michael Russer, who I met, well, I was talking about the psychology of it, and he was talking a little bit about it, but I was really doing the research on that.
Why did he call himself Mr. Internet? What did he possess at that time?
He was really good. Seriously, Michael was amazing. He was really one of the first pioneers of understanding how to use the internet as a marketing tool and to gain leverage over customers.
You know, when I was talking to you about this when we were on the Jiggy Johnson show, whatever the hell that guy's name is. And we were talking about that early on, and when I say early on, I mean when TSL and cable came through and really things started to speed up. There were, because I remember doing some of my early shows where we were debunking these guys who were coming out with these products, like how to be a star on the internet, how to make yourself known, and they were taking advantage of this. And the thing that was amazing, none of them ever wanted to be on the show, you know, talk about, but the thing that was amazing to me is, hey, how do they know? This is like brand new and there aren't any stars. I mean, so how would these people know? So Mr. Internet comes along. What made him... what made him stand out among all the charlatans?
Yeah, so he wasn't teaching people how to be a star. He was teaching people how to utilize it practically.
Well, you utilize it for money, though. I mean, commercially.
Oh, so he was putting on seminars. I mean,
How did he know? How did he know about commercially at that point? There weren't a lot of independent commercial sites.
I took a chance. He just threw the dice out there, right? He was a guy who was a mortgage guy and a real estate guy, and he left all that to start this whole thing on Mr. Internet and marketing online and everything. And I got hooked up with him and really dug into the psychology of the whole thing.
Right.
And he just took a chance, you know. I mean, you know, there was some of these guys were early pioneers, and they were really, really good. And, you know, I know there was a lot of bunk out there. Uh-huh. You and I both know that because we've been around these slick, shifty salespeople. Right. But he actually had, like, you know, things like psychographics. He was talking about a psychographic at that time, and which I was into, right? So there's demographics, which everybody knows, like listeners, you know, demographics, right?
Age, education,
and all sorts of other things. But a lot of people don't know about psychographics. And psychographics really come down to what we call the AIOs, which is attitudes, interests, and opinions. Because if you know your consumer, what your consumer's attitudes are about things, what their interests are about things, what their opinions are about things, if you know those three things and you know them inside and out, then you know the language of your consumer. And you'll be able to talk to your consumer in the right way. And you can also start and you'll love this, Frank, because you're a content guy. But you now can start gearing content towards your consumer if you know what their attitudes, interests, and opinions are.
Okay, and that's the whole Facebook thing, isn't it? I mean, that's what they use.
Certainly. That's what they use to design the advertisements is AIOs. So, you know, a lot of people missed something that Zuckerberg said when he first put out the Facebook. It's so funny, the Facebook.
Right? Especially with a face like that.
You're funny, man. You are so funny. He said, he made this quote, and it's in my book, and I quoted him in it. He said, social media is more psychology.
Yeah. Okay.
And so this whole internet doctor kind of evolved because social media hadn't quite come out yet. We were still working with, if you remember the how this all comes about is we have the internet and then we have chat rooms. Do you remember chat rooms?
Sure. I remember I go back like the Yahoo clubs. Remember Yahoo clubs and Excite clubs? Remember those places?
Absolutely. Excite. Yeah. I remember being part of an Excite club. Absolutely.
Okay. So yeah, I remember those and I'm sure there are people who do.
Yeah. And then, okay, now here's where people are going to remember because, you know, just, I think it was today, they just shut this down. So then we had these instant messaging, like AIM, you know, the AIM.
Yeah, that's gone. That's the one that left, right? That's gone.
That's the one that just shut that down. Right. They just shut it down is AIM.
Sure.
But so if you think what instant messenger was like a one-on-one chat room where we could talk to anybody in a form of, and we call it texting now.
Sure.
But that's what we were basically doing. But we were making friends without seeing them.
Yes.
And then the next evolution from all these instant messengers, because it wasn't just AIM. I mean, there was like five instant messengers,
sure,
including Skype.
Skype came later. Came real later.
Right. Yeah. But yeah. I mean, much later, right? But then we get to MySpace. And I still have a MySpace page floating out there.
No, I do too, because I'm shocked it's still there. I mean, it's still there, and I don't go there. But you know why? Because the last time I went there, you know, all these windows came up and went, "Hey, buddy, go here. You're stuck. Send me money. Go to hell." It was all, and it was like, "Oh wow, this place is really what a neighborhood now. Holy Christmas!" Ever since those Fox people bought it, that's who bought it, right? News Corp.
Well,
that's when it went to hell.
Okay, so here's the interesting thing, and your listeners will probably not know this. Few may. So when they first sold out MySpace,
right,
they bought it for $350 million. It was a huge, huge expenditure. Mm-hmm. Well, it's now only worth about $35 million, and that's because Ashton Kutcher purchased it, or right? Wasn't it? I think it's Ashton Kutcher or something like that. He bought
the
it
actor? Because it's
now. Yeah, he's now he a music
it?
Site.
Oh, he bought it's, it from New from News Corp.
Oh yeah, no, News Corp is out.
Oh, okay.
It's a music site now.
Oh, okay.
So this is for musicians, and it's really actually it's not Ashton Kutcher. Who's the singer? I'm confusing him with that. I don't pay
That's
attention
the actor,
to one more
yeah.
boy band.
I don't know.
Yeah, I can't think of it either. I wasn't into their music, but anyway. So. Anyway, it's now a music site, but okay. I still have a page out there floating around.
Yeah.
And they bought the whole thing for $35 million. So News Corp buys it for $350 million.
Wow.
Then it gets sold for $35 million. So it was worth one-tenth of what it was. And if you recall MySpace, and we're just talking about the evolution here of how we get to where we are. If you remember MySpace was actually kind of very much a Facebook-esque.
Oh, absolutely.
Thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Except then they stupidly decided to let the advertisers just take over. And it became painful.
You know, I left before it really got nutty because somebody who was my friend on MySpace, because I was on Facebook, like, I mean, I must have been one of the first 10,000. I mean, because somebody said, "Hey, you should come over to this other place where everybody's going." What a prediction. That was true. I mean, who knew? And I went over there because at the time when I was doing all my promotion about anything I had, including the shows and stuff, I signed up for all these. There's still tons of weird ones out there, you know? And I just went there. I went to all of them. So I went over to Facebook And why did I mention that? I don't know. You went because you said
because it's part of the evolution. Because we all left MySpace.
Right.
Now I joined Facebook in 2006. I think is what my record says.
Wow, that's old. That's new. That's just happened.
Right. That's 11 years ago.
Yeah. Okay.
It's,
whatever.
It's like yesterday.
Yeah, whatever.
But in between, then I'll tell you which one is no longer existent. By the way.
What?
But there was an international social media platform called eCademy.
No, I don't remember that one.
It was very cool. It got Me bought out. Man. It's now called, I think it's called academia.edu or something like that. I think is what they are now. But anyway, this eAcademy was this international business social media platform, and it was very cool. And I literally interacted with all sorts of people, many of which, by the way, I am still connected to in one way or another, whether it be Facebook or LinkedIn or Twitter or something like that. And so eAcademy was this in-between thing, and I learned so much about social media, and I learned so much about how people from other countries view social media. And so when I did jump on to Facebook in 2006, it was a very seamless transition. And the first thing that I did was I made sure that I gobbled up every name that I could. So I made sure that I was internet doctor. I made sure that my wife had her business name and all those things. I mean, I was way on top of that.
She was a real estate doctor. So you just, is that it? And then you just.
No, so she was, so she's really well known in our Research Triangle Park area here in North Carolina. And her name is Linda Kraft. And so I want to make sure.
Oh, it's Mrs. Izzo. That, when I saw you on Facebook, I said, is that Mrs. Izzo?
Yeah. That's Linda Kraft. Yeah.
And you so said, we have no, it, yes. You said, yeah, okay. Well, that's okay that's because you're professionals.
And I'm married way up, Frank.
I didn't want to say anything myself.
Well, I'm married way up. I tell her, I said, you know, I can only think of one mistake you ever made in your life, and that's because you married me. I said, like, it's the only thing I think of, because we've been married 19 years this week, so.
This is a relief, because I know if I met her, I would have to say it. If you
yeah, no, she, and she laughed. She laughed. She's got an amazing sense of humor. I mean, she has to put up with me, so. She has this amazing sense of humor. She's extraordinarily successful, and but she has a tremendous sense of humor, and we have a lot of fun together.
She should come on? She should come on with you here and there, or just come in and say hello or something.
Studio here. I know people can't see him. I'm in my studio here.
Right.
So I have my big on-air sign on my door.
Wow.
So she knows not. She knows that the dog's not supposed to come near here. Mm-hmm. She knows that if anybody comes in the door, that you keep them quiet. Okay. I mean, and I'm upstairs. And
it's okay. You just let her know that for next time or what have you, that she's invited. She can come on, and you know, we can get.
She's great.
Part of the real. I would hope you would say these things.
I mean, seriously, I hope she's great. She's an amazing speaker. We both speak around the country. And we've done several things together, and she's an amazing speaker, and she's so smart. I mean, so smart, which is why I still can't figure out why I somehow was able to land her, because she is so smart. And
well, you're the guest now, and I think I already love her. I think she should be on the, and I'll have her on separately. Go back to your thing here now.
Yeah. So now we're Facebooking.
So you're Facebooking now, and you're not the internet doctor now. What are you doing? Are you, bartending on the side or what? You're not in business yet.
No, I am. 2006. Okay. When I'm on Facebook is when I create Internet Doctor.
Okay. All right.
And so I'm on Facebook, I create Internet Doctor.
And what do you say you do? You put up a thing, I'm the Internet Doctor. And
right.
What?
I am the psychology of the Internet. I am the psychologist of the Internet. I am the guy who bridges the gap between business, psychology, and the Internet or in social media. I don't care what it is. And that still is true because my book, Got Social Mediology, really is the bridge between psychology. It's an intersection between psychology, business.
I love psychology.
And social media. That's really what it is.
This is the book that is titled, It Wasn't Even a Megapixel. Is that the name of the book, title of the book?
Got Social Mediology.
I know, I'm going to give you plenty of time.
You're so brilliant.
I'll give you plenty of time to plug the book, but I want to make sure that we know you, because I told them you were known.
Thank you. We'll keep plugging it throughout. Yeah. So I created Internet Doctor, and do you remember, I think it's still around, isn't it? There's a online attorney, thing that was created called all of a sudden I can't think of what it's called. But anyway, there was this online attorney that was made from one of the attorneys that represented O.J. Simpson.
Oh, yes. Yeah, that guy still has a... I don't know the name of his lawyer. Maybe it's,
What is it called? Yeah. It's called,
I don't know. I know it's still around because I get.
Yeah, it's still around, right? So I submit through them for $250 or whatever. I submit all the paperwork to create Internet Doctor. And I am a consultant. I am a speaker. I am, and what I do is I help businesses understand how to use the internet through psychology. That's really basically everything I wrote. And I submitted a sample of a logo that we just created out of nothing. And basically that was just Internet Doctor. True story. I submit this all through LegalZoom. LegalZoom.com.
There you go. Wow. Yeah.
Oh, holy cow. That was the tip of the tongue phenomenon thing.
That's good.
So I submit all this thing through LegalZoom. And they say, okay, everything looks good. I send it off. I'm sitting at home. I haven't heard anything about the registered trademark because you're filing, you know, to be a registered trademark as something and as a person in your business. I get a phone call from the Attorney General's office.
The United States Attorney General or North Carolina?
No, United States Attorney. I get a call from D.C.
Wow.
Mr. Izzo, we are overlooking over your file here. And
don't tell me the first thing he asked you was, how do you say this name?
No, okay. Government doesn't ask you anything. It just,
okay, go ahead.
You just assume that they know and they tell you what your name
all
is.
All right, go ahead.
So they call me and they said, you know, you cannot register the term internet because that's public domain, and you cannot register the term doctor because that's public domain. But we have never had anybody request to put those two together.
Two public domains together.
Yes.
So, wow. So you could be like celery pilot.
Yes, exactly. Right?
I could be nurse dentist, right? I know it sounds funny, but that's what you're getting at, right?
It is. It's exactly what happened. I mean, it's like directly out of a Monty Python scare. I mean, that's exactly what it sounds like, right?
Yeah.
And that's so brilliant. So they asked me to go through what it is I exactly do and I explained the whole psychology business and internet thing. And they said, you know what? We're satisfied with that. And I've had the trademark ever since.
I was going to ask you how Internet Doctor seems so simple. You know, you would think that they call you up or they just send you a letter and say, you know, Mr. Rizzo, there are 8 million Internet Doctors. Right?
I know. And there was none. And then I actually had some attorney from some international group say, you know, now that you are the registered trademark in the U.S. as the Internet Doctor, would you like to buy the global, would you like to become the global internet doctor?
Oh.
And
Ooh.
I was like, I don't know that I want to do that.
Global.
So I didn't. I didn't become the global internet doctor. I just stuck with that. And so anyway, from there, it kind of took off. And the next thing I knew, I was coaching people in terms of how to set up their websites, how to. And then, of course, now, you know, I mean, I just did a six-hour full-day session to businesses on how to utilize social media in an effective way without spending money on marketing. So through what I term social mediaology, and that's a term I created that is the study of ology, of course, study of social media from the psychological perspective of the user and the social, psychological, and cultural aspects of each platform. So if we understand each platform as, and I know that's really sounds really highly educated.
It sounds very academic. It sounds very erudite. It sounds like normal internet idiots are not going to call you up and say, I want to help me.
Well, yeah, let me simplify it.
Please do.
Okay, so if we will think about Facebook, Twitter, and LinkedIn, or whatever social media platform, if we will think about them as its own country with its own language and its own unwritten rules, norms, and expectations, just like we would any other country. And that we, that if we're going to be successful in that country, we have to speak the language. We have to understand those unwritten rules, norms, and expectations in order to be successful. And if we understand the platforms in that way and understand how the user wants to use and be contacted and connected with within those platforms, then a business can be quite successful without having to spend marketing dollars. Because I was all about, I'm all about to this day, helping the small business person and the medium-sized business person, that mom and pop shop, be able to be successful on social media without having to spend money on marketing, because I think that's really important. I've always felt that small business is the backbone of this country, and I want to be able to contribute to that by helping them be successful.
That's the noble interpretation, and I don't question that you do that while you make money and do your business. I mean, you do, that's good. I mean, it's better than saying, I want to do this because I want to sell people knives. Knives and swords. Right? I mean, of course you're helping people.
Yeah, but here's the thing. I have a book that's in bookstores. I've got two more coming out. I want to just tell people, I hear there's two types of people. There's people who want to write a book and there's people who have written a book. Mm-hmm. And the truth of the matter is, if you've written a book and it's in bookstores, you make about $2.50 per book sale. That's all that you make. At a $20 book, I make maybe $2.50, maybe right. $3 tops. That's it. That's all I make.
You get 70% from Amazon, right? 70%, don't you? Amazon? That's what I get.
No. Because my distributor's involved, right?
So when you're doing it with, sure.
By the time you get the distributor and, you know, the printer and everybody else out and the
attorney general and.
Amazon takes their share. I get maybe $6 per book. But, and you know, and what people don't also know, and listeners, if you're interested in writing a book, that's awesome. But I'm going to share something with you. When I won the gold medal for business books from the independent publishers, I've learned that 99% of the books never sell 1,000 books.
Right.
Yeah. Well, I mean, only 1% sell 1,000 books or more. So if you're looking at this as a money-making opportunity, that's not it. Where I make my money is I make my money speaking to people. That's where I make my money.
So you have these seminars? Or you
So people hire me to come in and speak. So
they hire you. You don't put up these little shows. You go around the country.
That's coming. But no, people actually bring me in
because I want to be comped to one of those.
Okay.
I want you to have me in there. I'll introduce you because I like you. And I don't introduce people I don't like.
Yeah, I know. I just brought a friend of mine into this, one of the second half of the show. And he came in and he had never seen me work. He'd never seen me perform and do what I do. And he said, that's unbelievable. He said, you just talked for 3 hours. And he said, people were laughing. And he said, you had them. He said, that's just amazing. And I'm like, well, this is what I do. This is really what I do. I mean, if you were to ask me, what is it that you do really, really well and that you're gifted and you feel like you're gifted? I speak.
Yeah.
That's what I do.
Right.
I mean, yes, I have ideas and I do research and I study and I study hard. I probably study harder now than I did in graduate school. But the truth of the matter is my gift is to speak. And there's nothing wrong with that. And I tell people, my dad, God bless him, but my dad gave me the gift of gab. But my dad also gave me the gift of knowing your facts and knowing your research. And my mom gave me the gift of creativity. And so when you can put creativity together with doing research and you have this gift of gab and you can be in front of people and you enjoy that, I think there's nothing better for me. And that's really the honest truth. I make my money speaking.
Is truth anything but honest?
Well, I know it's a little misnomer.
I'm picking on you, man.
I say those things all the time because I know I am a cliche guy. I can be so cliche sometimes.
I'm on this campaign. I've been on this campaign doing this show for ages. for people learning how to speak simply and every once in a while learning a word. You know, but express yourself. Because, you know, the other thing that's happened because of social media is that people are trying to express themselves in a way they are not used to doing because they haven't been taught to say things, and they say things repetitively, and then the next thing you know, they're weathermen, and they're telling you that there's tornadic activity in your play, and they're making up words, and they're doing things, and I hate them all, I want to choke them to death. But, let me say this, on the unviolent psycho, I've been talking about psychographics, this is psycho audio, right? What you're saying, and I think that I can see you, I can just, in my mind, I can see how well you are as a speaker. I have done speaking, but certainly not like you. You've got an entire, library of topics and an area to go into. You know, I don't do that. I show up and talk about something they want me to talk about, and then I make it into a funny. But you know what I do is this. Listen to this. This is some marketing here. I never tell people or organizations hiring me to talk, and they say, oh, you're a speaker. What can you speak about? And then they tell me what is of concern with your association right now? They mention a topic, and that's where I immediately start. But I never tell them that I'm a comedian. I do it comic. Because if I do that, then they'll expect me to do jokes.
Right. You see? It's a problem.
You know, and you're like, you could be very humorous, right? And things come up, but they're not going there to hear you. And you said, tell jokes, but you said you were. One time you did a stand-up? Are you trying to be a stand-up?
Yeah, I tried to do stand-up. Yeah, for 2 years.
Do you remember any of the jokes? Do you remember how you opened up a set?
I used to write my own stuff.
Sure. Do you remember how you opened a set?
I used to do this whole, because I was in a college town, right?
Yeah.
I used to do this whole fraternity sorority set.
Ah, yeah, okay.
Right? Because, there's three easy things in comedy, right? The three easiest things in comedy when it comes to the college crowd is you talk about booze, drugs, and sex. If you talk about those three things, you can generally get a college crowd engaged.
That also might add, it also works I spoke once for an ecumenical council of the Catholic Church, and it works there too. Okay, so yeah, what you're saying is you knew your audience. Know your audience, right? You weren't.
Yeah, you got it, it's a psychographic thing.
Sure.
Here comes right back to the psychographic. It's not the demographics that were important. It was the psychographic.
A really good definition, like in one sentence, of psychographic.
It is understanding the emotional and mental aspects of your consumer.
Okay. There you go. That's good. I like that. Okay. Now
That's really what it is. But it really comes down to that. And that's why whenever you write content or, you deliver content, and like in this case, in a podcast or whatever, it's not just knowing your demographic, it's knowing what the psychographic is.
This isn't a podcast, by the way. This is a live internet broadcast. And this is the first.
This is a live show?
This is the first and it's always been. This is the first live internet talk show ever
This is the original live internet radio show?
Yes, from Amcast.com, which was the first station that was all live. Yes, this is, I'm the only one to talk. And, oh, I wish they could see your face. It's much like the picture on the blog right now. Oh, stop it.
Okay, my mouth. Okay, ladies and gentlemen.
You were live?
No, I thought this was Memorex.
Memorable.
I gotta explain Memorex. Okay, so ladies and gentlemen, a long time ago, in a galaxy far, far away,
they know about
tapes. There were these things called cassette tapes, and one of the best cassette tapes ever was called Memorex.
And they were good reel to reel too, and people know about reel to reel. So wait a second, go back, internet doctor. We're talking about psychographics here, and how this, now this is survived time, because that early Facebook, when people started to get involved with you, and you're not like GoDaddy.
No.
Oh, I hate them. Oh, let's not get started.
Really? Why do you dislike them?
Because the guy, who was the guy who started it?
Oh, gosh.
I forgot his name. Schmuckface McJoe or something, whatever it was.
You're right. I think it was Mr. Schmuckface.
Yeah. I'll tell you why. Because back when this was was the first show, and when he was started to do this little podcast, some kind of broadcast he did through GoDaddy, and I wrote and I told him, I said, why don't you be on my show? Because I'm the guy who started, you know, I'm the one doing the talk show, the thing like that. And he had his people send me things and ask me about this and that as if I was like freaking Merv Griffin. It's like, you know, it's like, why? Just get on the goddamn microphone and talk with me about GoDaddy. So he didn't. So I've been bad mouthing GoDaddy from the beginning, but I don't know where the heck he wound up, but he used to do this show with these two girls. And I said, he just wouldn't, come on. It's like, what's the big deal?
Didn't he do this thing with Shoutcast, wasn't it? Or broadcast?
Remember all those other, it was one of those, I don't know what they used in those days.
So the whole psychographic thing. And by the way, if you're a listener and you're in business, I want to really, really encourage you that, first of all, you should be regularly looking at your demographics and your psychographics. And when I say that, I want you to look at who you have sold.
Oh, I have a client for you too, by the way. I was, the other day, I talked to him and he'll be getting in touch with you. I'm not going to tell you his name over the phone over the air live here, because people will, you know, they'll go into his house, they'll go around his place and they'll find him and they'll harass his family and they may hurt his dog. But here's the deal. Although the last dog he had needed to be put down anyway. So look, I'm saying this. I'm already passing the word, because I know people who say to me, you're in a little trouble. 13,000 people just saw my page and nobody wants to involve, you know, things like that. And I said, well, you got to go to Jay Izzo. And they said, is that Rizzo without an R? And I said, no, it's not Schmuck. It's I-Z-S-O. Didn't you ever hear Zsa Zsa Gabor? And the guy goes like, who's that? I just stupid people. I'm surrounded by idiots. So, there are people we can get to you. So these people could, other than buying your book, what do they do? Do they go to your website?
They can simply contact me, and I have a fee structure where I consult businesses. I will consult businesses on a variety of different topics and levels when it comes to their online marketing and their digital marketing, and help them understand where they're having a disconnect. Because, Frank, what we typically see, and what I typically see in businesses when I walk into, regardless of the size, it's the same problem. And here's what it is. You think you're marketing to one group, but your actual marketing is really marketing to someone else. And you don't even know it. And it's because you're generally, there's a psychological term called the Dunning-Kruger effect. Basically, you're in a business doing whatever your business is, but you're also doing the marketing and you have a very little bit of knowledge of marketing.
Right.
But it's interesting that if you have a little bit of knowledge, you think you know everything.
Mm.
And that's the Dunning-Kruger effect. Because the people who really know their business, they realize there's so much they don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I mean, that's what you learn. And so what happens is businesses will mirror image themselves so frequently, where what they will do is they go, oh, I'm marketing to a high end, but they're not getting any high end clients. Everybody they're closing is in the middle class. Mm-hmm. And they go, but my marketing's high end. No, your marketing is middle class, because you're the one who's making the judgment on your marketing. And you know what? You're not thinking, you're not emoting, you're not mentally connecting with that person in your marketing. You're judging it from your own perspective, mm-hmm. which is not their perspective. And because you have a little bit of knowledge, it is causing you a heartache about why you're not actually getting that customer to land there. And it's the same problem. I see it all the time,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
and I have to sit down and we have to restructure, because how often, somebody will put out the people, oh, I don't like this, but it was actually the perfect piece for right. what they were looking for. And I see that regularly, and it's quite honestly, I get it. I understand we're human and we believe what we know is what we know and we accept what we accept and we're sheep. You know, we will go to the slaughter. We don't even realize we're going there. We go, well, everybody else is going, so I must go too. So I get it. It's what we do.
Yeah, you have a very tolerant and I guess understanding of the masses. That, because you can't, psychographics obviously has to involve the similarities in people. I'm going to call me psycho. This is not like demographics, because it doesn't do that. Because, you know, if you have a podcast for farmers, you know, they're farmers. They're different than if you have a podcast for gardeners. I don't know, they're too much alike, but you know what I mean, right?
Well, and I can simplify it. Let me give you a real simple example. This is really awesome, especially right now in the times that we live in. There is a dramatic difference between selling a Republican or a Democrat.
Selling them something?
Selling something to a Republican or selling something to a Democrat is two different things. Because, and people don't understand, it's because they each have an attitude that is very unique. Their interests are unique and their opinions are unique. So when you really are trying to approach, and I'm just using those.
That's okay.
Because it's the simplest example that I can help people understand it. If you're trying to sell to a Democrat, typically, right? And if you will come up with a message that is more about being able to connect with your world and be a little bit more green and recycle the world, that's a message that's going to really resonate far more with a Democrat than a Republican who's going to be more of, is there a profit? What's in it for me? You know, how is this going to help me? It's a little bit more individualistic versus collectivistic. Mm-hmm. And so we tend to see that the Democratic side's a little bit more collectivistic. The Republican side is a little more individualistic. I'm not saying either one is right or wrong, by the way. I don't want people to hear that.
No,
I'm just saying
not
that
you.
When we sell that on
Leave
a psychographic.
That to me.
Yeah, so when we sell it on a psychographic side,
sure.
I am writing a message. If I'm looking at it, I'm going to be writing my message a little bit differently for each group if I'm doing that. So the more liberal you are, you know, I'm going to write a message that's going to be a little bit different than the more conservative you are. I'm going to write a completely different message just because that's your attitude or your interest or your opinion. Matter of fact, if somebody was a Christian versus a Muslim, I'm going to change my message on how I'm going to approach them as well. And so, and even when we talk about, you know, let's combine demographics and psychographics for a second. So let's say, you know, you want to do more business with more millionaires, right?
Right.
So typically, what we do is we go, okay, well, we know they're going to make over $1 million, but then you got to start thinking about what's their attitudes on things, right?
Right.
Well, typically, if you're a millionaire, and what we know about millionaires, at least in this country, is that 88% of millionaires are first-time millionaires. Only 12%, this is what we know from the statistics, only 12% of millionaires actually inherited their money. 88% are first-time millionaires. So that means that they've created their own wealth, which means now I've got an attitude that they created their own wealth. What that means that they work hard, that they also are self-interested, and they want to be recognized. So now I'm starting to put this psychographic together.
Mm-hmm.
So how do I now reach somebody who is proud of their accomplishments for being the first in their family to be a millionaire, that they could be recognized for that? So how can I design my marketing around that? What can I do in social media to play into that role? I also know that one of the things that millionaires do is they do the same thing as everybody else. It's just that their toys are more expensive.
Mm-hmm.
So I got to have more of a luxury look. You got to use verbiage that's a little more academic. I have to have a better vocabulary. So often what we do is we try to simplify the message so much that actually we've eliminated the millionaire, because the millionaire wants to feel like they are educated. So you actually have to use bigger words. You actually have to use more academic minded words, even though that goes completely probably against the grain of what you're doing in marketing. But the fact of the matter is that's the way most millionaires do think. And so you have to start considering all those things when you're putting your marketing pieces together or your social media digital strategy. Did you hear what I just said?
I'm listening.
Strategy.
What do you think I do? Do you think I went to the bathroom? I'm listening.
No, I just
yeah, I know.
I should say it. And, but when, you know, I think about that, I, that's the piece that people just don't think about, because that's what, and that's why people hire me, because that's my job. My job is to figure out who do you want to sell to, and then how do we get there?
I think that you'll have, I think that you're going to get some, calls from this, because of all the people that we've been on, have been on, talking about things like this. You seem to be, the only one who has taken this, I don't think you have much competition in the psychographic, department, do you? I mean, did you take psychology when you were in that, at that college? Is that what, did you study it?
My master's and doctoral works in psychology.
There you go. You didn't tell me you have a master's and a doctorate. You didn't tell me that.
Yeah, so I have a master's of science degree in experimental psychology.
So you're not internet doctor, you're Dr. Izzo. You are Dr. Izzo.
No, I'm ABD. It means all but this.
You're ABD, I'm ADD.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's all. No, so I studied under B.F. Skinner's last student.
Oh, wow. I read his Walden. Didn't he write a Walden?
Yeah, Walden 2.
Walden 2. Yeah, I remember that. Yeah, I'm really interested in psychology. And, because, you know, doesn't matter why, because that's when I'm on alone.
People should be. Because,
I think so too. Yeah.
Because, you know, the fact of the matter is, and I say this even everywhere I speak, so if you ever hear me speak, whoever's listening and you hear me speak, I'm going to say the same thing that I've always said, and that is this. There's no such thing as B2B or B2C, right? So get that notion out of your head.
Wait a second. I never even heard that. What's B2B and B2C? B2C and so, what?
So B2C is business to consumer. Oh, B2B okay. is business to business, and there's no such thing as either one. It's all P2P, which is person to person. The fact of the matter is, everybody wants to think that B2B, doing business with another business, is somehow unique. At the end of the day, here's how it works. I don't give my money to people I don't trust. I don't trust people I don't like. I don't like people I don't know. So if you get to be known and you become likable, you have a better chance of being trusted. And if you have a better chance of being trusted, I don't care if you're in the business-to-business world or the business-to-consumer world, chances are higher and much more likely that people are going to do business with you.
That's good crap. I got to tell you. I like that. No, well, I'm not. True. I'm using it's the true. Word. I'm not using the word crap as it's bad. I'm saying that's like, you know, that's good.
But it's true. I mean, think about it. Okay. Like, do you hire out like anybody to mow your lawn or anything, or do you do your lawn?
I have. I mean, I have hired people. Sure.
Okay. Here's the thing I tell people. I did a talk once in, I think it was in Toronto. I did this talk entitled "It's Mine and I Own It," and it's about this very thing that we are really reluctant to let people have something that we own.
Right.
Right. We're really reluctant. So, you know, if somebody says, "Can I borrow your phone?" we may give them the phone. But if he says, "Can I borrow your phone to make a long distance call? It's going to be roaming charges." Chances are you're not going to do it, right? So we are very reluctant to give people because there's a fear that if I give you something, I'll never get it back, or it's never going to be like the way it was.
Never be the same, right? Right. I think that's more so, right?
Yeah, it's one of those two things. It's either going to be I'm not going to get it back, or it's not going to be the way it was. So when it's
more borrowers than stealers, there are more borrowers than stealers. Go ahead.
Yeah, no, you're right. Yeah. But even if it's our yard, right? You don't. If you really care about your yard, which most people do, in the neighborhoods that they live in, you're not going to just let anybody cut that grass. And if it's wrong, you're going to be really upset because it's a reflection of you. Because, I mean, like, we entertain a lot in my house here in Raleigh, North Carolina. So if my yard is wrong, my wife is, I'm telling you, the lovely and talented Linda is not happy. And I've got to find somebody to fix it. Mm-hmm. And, by the way, the landscaper's fired. Okay. Mm-hmm. So that's the way it is, because it's her yard. It's a reflection of her, and she wants it perfect, especially when companies come over. Well, this is true of everything, whether it's our life, like when we try to buy life insurance, whether it's our house that we're trying to sell because we're trying to move. We need to have people that we like so that we can trust them. This is why typically people recommend people that they know.
Now, why doesn't that seem like something that's particularly deep? Because, you know, when people hire people, they rarely hire people they don't like. I mean, right? So do they?
No, well, no, okay. but here's the problem with the sales end of it, because I talked to a lot of salespeople.
Mm-hmm.
And Dr. Amy Cuddy, who wrote a great book called Presence, she is a Harvard professor, and she has done a lot of research in this area of sales and what makes people trustworthy and buy. Mm-hmm. And it's really interesting. Salespeople try to work so hard on being competent, and competence is not what sells people. It's warmth. So we have it so messed up that we are so busy trying to be smarter, when the truth is, if we were just a little warmer, we would sell more people. And and her research is so brilliant and so clever and so simple. And you go, and I kick myself every time I read her research and go, why didn't I think of that? It's so elegantly simple.
Yeah.
That I could have thought about that and come up with that same conclusion. But it's really true. You think about the people that we really trust, most of them have more warmth factor than they do being extraordinarily competent. We don't care about the competence as much as humans. We care about the warmth factor, because warmth makes us trust them. And that's part of that whole likability thing. I always tell people, be more likable and people will want to do business with you.
Mm.
I mean, think about, I mean, you and I are musicians to an extent. Mm-hmm. And
I've been a musician.
You're far better than him. I'm a hack. And I admit it, and I don't have a problem with that.
No.
But I've watched a lot of bands. Like, I watched, my wife and I just went to Zac Brown Band on last Friday. And we were fortunate enough, we got to go behind stage and while they were warming up, and they were putting together a Tom Petty song in honor of Tom Petty. And so we got to watch this whole creative process. Here is the thing that was so awesome about Zac Brown. It wasn't because he's the most competent musician in the world. It's not. But he makes you feel like you're the most important person in the world out there. That's what was cool to me.
I worked, do you know anything about my history?
I know a little bit about, because
I'm sure Jiggy is always telling people. Yeah. I don't let this around. But I remember the one thing I truly remember working with Wolfman Jack he said, you know, when you're on the radio, when you're there, don't worry about who's talking to you. 13,000 people, 8 million people, you know, because he was on a 250,000 watt station that, you know, blew across the country. He said, because you're always just talking to that one person.
Right.
Right there, that one person. So you never have to, it's a very intimate thing inside of this, there's nothing intimate about radio, but there is when you're talking to that one, it's just you and that person, period. I never forgot that. And it works. If I was a more likable person, more people would feel like they're talking with me. I'm joking. Okay, go ahead. All right.
You know what I mean. Yeah, I know. Let's talk about Wolfman Jack, because I had we talked about this.
To bring this up because I didn't want to make this about
me. No, but it's not. But I think it's important, because I think it's a great thing that people need to focus on in what they do in their life.
Okay.
And I don't care what it is that you do. I don't care what business you're in. The fact of the matter is, if you will focus on knowing who that person is that you are really trying to sell, and I don't care if you just focus on that person and can see that person really clearly in your mind of what that person looks like. I mean, like right now I'm talking to Frank, but the truth is I'm talking to somebody that's in this listening audience, and I'm talking to you, and you know I'm talking to you. You know that I am speaking a language that resonates with you. You know that there's something stirring inside your mind and your emotions that I'm connecting with you, that you go, I need to really give this guy a call, or I need to talk to someone like him that I need to talk to because I do need some help. And you know, when we're focused on very clearly who that person looks like, what that person looks like, then what we're doing, even when we're doing a radio show live to thousands upon thousands of people, when we're doing that, we're really talking to one person at a time, even though there's a group of people listening. I'm really talking to just one person because that person is important. And Frank, let's just cut the BS here. But the truth of the matter is you care about those people that are out there that listen to you because this is what you do. And so you want to entertain them. You've got a picture in your mind of who that person is. It's a one person audience and you're trying to entertain them the best that you can. And that's what Wolfman Jack did. And I'll never forget walking into his studio in Belhaven, North Carolina.
Oh, you were down there? You went, yeah, I think you mentioned it, didn't you,
we were selling his house for a while.
Oh, okay. The house.
So
yeah.
Mrs. Wolfman Jack was there. And, so she let us go in the studio and at the time I shot Lou. Some pictures with my Sony camera.
Lou Lamb.
Yeah, Lou.
Lou Lamb Smith, yeah.
Thank you. Thank you so much for that. Cause I was trying to pull her name and I couldn't get it out. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so she let us into the studio. Now, interesting, she would not let us into his bedroom. She kept that door locked because mm-hmm. she never went back in there after he passed. Anyway, so she let me go in the studio and we sat on the couch and there was an upright piano and his Elvis styled one piece outfits with the big hats with the, feather, styled hat bands that he had. I'll never forget. I can still remember the carpet and I mean everything.
That big banister, that big banister that went up to the upstairs there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I didn't spend a lot of time there. I was, you know, I hung out and we had a studio in his Beverly Hills home. So that's where we were.
But here's what got me, right?
What
so
got you're you?
Looking at the studio and this is the point I was trying to make. He was surrounded by all this stuff, but he was always talking to one person. I mean, I remember as a kid listening to Wolfman Jack and I always thought, how does he know the music that I want to hear? Mm-hmm. How does he know that? How did he know that I wanted to hear that song? Right? How did he know? And I'll never forget the one time, one of my favorite songs that I love listening to was by the Guess Who called Clap for the Wolfman. It's an old song.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
And occasionally Wolfman Jack would play it. And I'll never forget, I was young and I said, wouldn't it be awesome if Wolfman Jack could play Clap for the Wolfman? And what did he do? I mean, it was just like, how did he read my mind? And he played it. And it was just a great moment. And I always felt like whenever I listened to Wolfman Jack, he knew what I wanted to hear.
Well, here's something that people don't know about Wolfman Jack. He was a good guesser.
I'm sure, I don't know.
Hey, he once told me I was pregnant. And I didn't go very far, did it? Jay Izzo is with us. He is terrific. And this, I gotta tell you something. This guy is going to be talking with me again on shows because there's a lot to talk about. And he's like me. He just sits there and talks. And I talk like I talk. And we're talking about stuff that certainly can't be totally covered in one show. So you're going into my hall of regulars.
I'd love to. You know what? I always feel that radio should be a conversation. And it doesn't necessarily have to have a script. Because I think sometimes I say this to businesses all the time. Sometimes you overscript yourselves mm-hmm. so much that you have all these answers to every objection. But the one thing that you don't have is you don't have a heart to understand where they're from.
I know, you know, one of my mottos is this. I never rehearse, but I'm always prepared.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm,
you like that? You want to buy it from me? You want to use it?
I dig that because
yeah.
I'm right
with
you.
You know
what
I mean? Yeah.
And by the way, I am going to steal it. I'm not even going to give it back. I'm just going to steal it.
You got it. So that's what life's all about. Remember, amateurs imitate, professionals steal. Jay Izzo's with us, and we're going to do some plugging of his book because there's like 30. We only got another 20 minutes left there, but so you see how you know Greg goes. You know people who come on the show for the first time, Jay, they say to me, "Oh my goodness, are you going to get on at 9:30? You get off at 11? What are we going to? Are you? That's a long time." And then the next thing you know, I'm going, "You know, it's time to go," and they're like, "What?" because it goes so quickly, talking this, the conversation and, you know, it's cause it's ad hoc and it's free. I don't like to do a lot of research about the person who's coming on so that I can learn as the audience learns. You know what I mean?
Yeah, well, right. And I love because it's organic and I think
yes, that's a good word for it.
Yeah, I think one thing that we like
for the Democrats, that's a good word. It's organic. It's mechanical for the Republicans, listen.
It's mechanical. We're lacking mechanability. We're a little bit okay.
Well, I appreciate you saying that about. Well, I'm glad you've got a good
just,
feeling.
It's just, but it's just well, no. I think there's an authenticity. One of the things that I know that works in when we talk about things going viral, for instance.
Yeah.
One of the things that if you really look at things that go viral, it's really, there's generally an organic authenticity to it. I mean, the best things that you've ever seen on a YouTube video, for instance, generally seem to be pretty unscripted. They're just very organic and they just happen and it's awesome. Is there anything funnier than seeing somebody slip on a banana peel still to this
still,
day?
Yeah, exactly. That's
right. It's still funny. It's still funny bit. It may be very juvenile. It may be very Three Stooges-esque, but you know what? It's still a funny bit.
Slapstick will always get people will always laugh at that. As long as the guy doesn't hit his skull. And now today though, that's not true. Cause today cartoons will do that. Today a cartoon today, for millennials, he'll slip on something and he'll go down head first and then his skull will open up, his brains will come out, and the kids laugh. They do. I'm telling you, I've seen these cartoons are absolutely outrageous. Millennials are different, but ultimately, whether it's graphic or not, it's the same action that's being laughed about.
It was the same. I mean, yeah. I had this discussion with my advisor. So my advisor back in grad school, his name was Dr. Thomas A. Brigham, and he co-wrote the handbook of applied behavioral analysis with Dr. Catania. And I had this discussion with him about cartoons and are kids really learning how to be abusive by watching Bugs Bunny, for instance, right?
Well, not because, Bugs. Now, I did a show a couple of weeks ago because that's the cartoon character I was always, that always equated with me when I was in Hollywood, when I did all my stuff there. Said, you know who you are? You're Bugs Bunny. And a lot of the people didn't know Bugs Bunny, a lot of my audience, because they were younger. So you had to imagine that. But today, go ahead. Say what you were going to say now, because I just interrupted you.
So we would watch Bugs Bunny.
Yeah.
And one of the, if you watched the Bugs Bunny Roadrunner show, there was the Roadrunner Coyote. And the coyote was falling off the cliff.
Yeah, Wile E, yeah.
And hitting the ground and being slammed with a rock and being pinched between rocks. And he'd come out in scissors or whatever.
Because failure is fun. That failure was funny.
It's because we love Schadenfreude.
Schadenfreude. I like this word. I want to write it down now because I don't know it. You obviously know a lot of German, and I won't ask you why.
No,
why don't you just
Schadenfreude? It's a psychological term.
I don't know, though. Schadenfreude.
Schadenfreude.
Freude.
Yeah, what it is taking pleasure in other people's pain.
Oh, is that Schadenfreude?
Yeah, that's Schadenfreude.
I got a lot of Schadenfreude. I got to tell you, I'm dripping with Schadenfreude.
Schadenfreude.
I'm a Schadenfreude. I'm Schadenfreudes, I think.
Yeah, Schadenfreude. That is actually, it's a commonly used thing in radio, believe it or not. A lot of radio hosts like to use some form of Schadenfreude where they're taking the pleasure in the disaster of somebody else.
Oh, okay.
What that does, right, is that irritates the listener, right? Or it gets a listener on your side because there's no gray area.
Oh, that way, yeah, you're right. Talk show guys with agendas. Yeah.
Right.
Right.
Right. So you use Schadenfreude where you take joy, like if you're a liberal and you hate Trump, and anytime Trump does something that it seems like he's going to get in trouble, that's Schadenfreude. Mm. If you're Republican and you see Hillary, when you read that Bill Clinton threw her manuscript away saying, don't publish this. Well, that's Schadenfreude.
Mm-hmm. Right? Well, when he hits a golf ball and she falls into the plane, that's Schadenfreude.
That's
Schadenfreude.
when we're enjoying it.
Remember that?
If you're enjoying it, if
we all laughed. I laughed no matter who you like. I laughed. That's I like no one could do it to anybody. I laugh.
Yeah. So yeah. No. But that's
yes. It's I really see. True. I get you.
Yeah, it's really true. Mm-hmm. So we kind of did that. That's why all these. Have you seen the fail videos? Right. I mean, that's a common thing, right? All these fails, like, you know, people on motorcycle fails where they fall off the bike, or the
fails on
the skateboards, or the fails on the bicycles, or whatever, or fails of trying to dive into the pool and things like that. I mean,
yeah,
basic schadenfreude. We're taking pleasure in someone else's pain because we think it's funny, or we get some enjoyment out of it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's. Yeah, I mean it's what we do. It's part of our yes. human DNA is what it is.
I love that. You know, I'm into words and titles and all sorts of things. That's a great one. Schadenfreude. That's now part of my vocabulary.
Yeah, you're gonna use that one.
A lot, probably.
I'm telling you.
Then I'll get
you.
Bored and use something else. But no, because you
will, and I'll tell you why. Because I think you're the perfect person to do schadenfreude.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate that.
Perfect. Well, because you've got that.
I'm a Schadenfreudite.
Yeah.
I'd like to talk to you tonight about Schadenfreudism. I don't mean to be I'm going to tell people they talk to them. I don't mean to be Schadenfreudistic about this, but is that scar on your face from a fall? Right? I love it.
Oh, that's awesome. I'm an anti-Schadenfreudite. Yeah, that's what I am. Anti-Schadenfreudite.
I see what you're saying. And and knowing this, there's a very particular psychological approach to people you want to be, your clients.
Sure.
Right.
There is.
This is the crux. This is the nucleus. So the nuclear crux of it. I just made another one by nuclear crux is the, that's the center of the nucleus. What do they call the center of the nucleus? If the nucleus is the center, doesn't it have to have a center? What is it? The subnucleus? Have to be a, and here's one I want to tell you too, because this one's been getting on my nerves.
Okay.
Okay. You ready? I was going to post something. Every once in a while, something I think about, I'll post there on Facebook. I don't go there that much anyway, because Zuckerberg sends me notes in Russian. But anyway, no. And that's this. Tech, maybe you could explain this to me, Jay.
Sure.
Okay, you ready?
Sure. Yeah.
Are there, now you know there's an Air Force One. Why is there an Air Force One? Why is it called Air Force One?
Because it's the first plane.
Because there is another. There's an Air Force Two.
Oh, there's several, actually.
So there's Air Force Three? How many did they call?
It's rumored that there's as many as five Air Force One styles.
No, but there's Air Force Ones. But, I mean, there's a plane called Air Force One because there's an Air Force Two for the vice president, right? It's called One and Two because there are two of them, right?
Right.
Okay. Well, let me tell you something. How come when there's a tragedy – and something really horrible happens, the second responders never show up?
This is great radio right here.
Well, I mean, come on. They are the responders. Why are they the first responders if nobody else shows up after them? Okay, they're also the last responders, aren't they then?
Okay, hold on.
Yeah, come on.
Oh, I get that. I get this because
we
do a lot with the Red Cross.
So
we do a lot with the Red Cross. And so I'll tell you why they're called first responders.
Go.
So you have those folks who are the front lines, that they're the ones who come to the fire first.
Yeah,
or
right.
Here. So they're the very first responders. Now, you do have a second response team, right, which is your backup team. So you do have a second response team, and usually they sit further back. They're usually
worth crap because nobody ever says anything like, well, when the second responders showed up, they helped the first responders who didn't do too well. You never hear that, right? Yeah, or if there's a bad second, the second responders, you know, it's like if they're on a battlefield, right? When you have waves of troops going, right?
Right. So, I mean, the first responders are literally the first ones to show up. They're the ones who put their lives on the line.
But they never mention, ever mention anyone but the first responders. As if, I mean, what do? You fail? If you fail, if you go to school, right. You're not.
Well, because we consider them, and you're right. Okay, yeah. From a logistics standpoint, and I will completely agree
from
with this.
English.
I will concede
How
this
about
point.
The language that we use? How about that one? If yes. There's a first responder, there must be a second responder. Does anybody say, I'm an only child? So people own up and go, oh, you're the first child your parents had, right? yeah. Hello? Right? I mean, I'm sick of this stuff, Jay. I think we need to say exactly what is going on with everything.
Okay. But that's part of that's the problem with our English language.
Yeah, you bet.
I mean, if we want to really get down to it, I mean, you and I have made a living out of the faux pas of the English language.
No, it is, but our talk, when you're doing business and you're doing talking sure. simply, I mean, nobody's going to get confused if you don't say first responder. Nobody's going to get confused if you don't use a repetitive phrase. They're going to understand what you're saying. So talking to people, whether you're on the radio or whether you're a business guy or on the phone, talking to them as simply, as succinctly as possible, with a bright vocabulary, and just saying what you got to say and get the hell out of there. You know, right? Instead of coming up with all these ridiculous terms and think, why are we doing this?
I know, I get it.
It's on the news, it's everywhere. This wasn't done. Listen to Cronkite. He never did it. No, maybe he did. But I mean, why is that? Why do we have to talk so much when we're just saying a simple thing?
Because it's all marketing at the end of the day.
I like that answer. Tell him.
It's all marketing at the end of the day. We're just marketing. Mm-hmm. We're trying to market something. We're trying to look impressive. We're either trying to market ourselves, market someone else, market something else, yeah. market something that we have. And so we have to give them clever names, clever titles. Why?
Yeah, I don't know. It makes me sick though.
Let me ask you a question. What is really a vice president?
Okay. He's a second responder, isn't he?
What is the vice part of vice president really mean?
Well, I'll tell you what we're going to do right now, as we always do. We're going to look into our 1960 Webster's. New American Dictionary. Okay.
Let's do that. I want to know what the vice.
Let's look at that. I do this all the time. I go, why do they, you know, curious? Because I think that people should do this and understand stuff so they don't say things like, they don't say these repetitive VI.
Because technically he's not the second president.
Yeah.
Or is he?
Well, does vice mean in terms of?
Was it something that we pulled over from England during the Revolutionary War?
Let's see.
I don't know.
Here
was Viceroy? Was it a Viceroy president? I don't know.
Well, look at the Kentucky Derby. What's a Derby? A Derby is was taken from Derby. They said Derby was named after somebody. We made it into a Derby. What's a Derby? We changed the whole thing. Here's a hat.
A Derby was a hat.
Yes, but it was because people couldn't say Derby, and they would say down in South, they said, it's a Derby, 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 because of the, and then they said Derby, so they said, I guess it's Derby, D-E-R-B-Y, you know those, when I went to England, when I lived in England for a while, and they said to me, they said, you know, we're one country separated by the same language. Here's vice, a bad habit.
Okay.
Depravity.
There it is.
Fault.
Here we go.
Corruption, depravity, inequity, pollution, crime, immorality, guilt, wickedness, goodness. No, there's a couple of vices here too.
Is this perfect? I mean, what a great description of the second president. Keep going. I want to keep going with that.
Goodness, virtue, holiness, righteousness, integrity, morality, a grip or grasp to control with a vice. In place of. Okay, there it is, right there.
How far did you have to read down to get to in place of?
There are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And then it goes on to vice with dash. Vice president is actually a word, and they use it here. It says, so it's a definition in itself. An official ranking next below a president. Setting,
What? Yeah.
Setting for the president in his absence. It says setting? Does that say setting? Yeah. Succeeding him as president on the president's death. Vice presidential. Vice regal pertaining to a viceroy. Not the cigarette, but a viceroy, a governor, you see how all this, vice versa. So I did have to, there's a lot, you have to go pretty deep. But the one that says in place of is one of the, so that's what it means.
But had you not looked it up, right? Because I mean, I was being absolutely sincere.
Yeah, I did too.
When I said, I do this.
What?
I was being sincere when I said, really, what does that mean?
Yeah.
I mean, what does it mean, vice? I mean, the only thing I remember of vice is either, you know, like the bourbon I like to have occasionally. I call that a vice. And then.
Right. It's in there too. Right.
right. And then the vice grip that I used when I was on the shop and the farm.
It's because we don't use it in other stuff. It's like if you own the business, you own 51% of the business, and the other guy only owns 49. They don't say you're the vice owner. They don't say don't use that way, right? Because they're the vice owner. They don't use it any other way. For some reason, they went, let's use vice for president, and that's it. No more. Maybe they passed the law.
I'm just thinking, going, okay, we've got first string and vice string in football. We got the first string guys and the vice string.
The second responders of the vice, they go out there. Right. You got a second, what do they call them? The second team. Oh, that's right. Because there's offense and defense.
Right. Yeah. It's second team.
Well, the offense can't play defense. So yes, they're two just separate teams though. So no one's a vice.
And you have your backups, right? Which are your second.
Okay. Your seconds are vice. You got a vice team. I got a vice left wing. Oh, that's hockey.
Well, yeah, that's hockey, but that's okay too. We can use that. You got your center, and then you have a vice center.
Nobody uses vice for anything.
And then if you have four lines, you have a vice center.
Well, a lawyer comes to you and says, "You own all your money, and your wife is the vice husband. No, you're the vice. You're the vice. If you're second in line, I don't. It's ridiculous how we use it. You see what I'm saying? Nobody even asks questions. It's important to ask questions."
Because we just take for granted, we say all this stuff. I mean, do you know, we just learn stuff and we say it. True story, I gotta tell you this story, and I know it has nothing to do with what I do, but it's just a great story.
Okay, go ahead, we got 5 minutes, it's yours, take it away.
Alright, so, I was literally having a conversation with somebody who didn't know that the Star Spangled Banner was written during the Revolutionary War. They thought it was written during the Civil War. And they thought that the line about freedom from slavery, they thought it meant it had to deal with the Civil War. And I said, no, this was done at Fort Henry when everybody died. They wrote this, that the flag was still there, even though that everybody died in freedom from the slavery from getting out from under British rule.
What's his name? I forgot his name. He only wrote the lyrics. It's an old English drinking song.
Francis Scott Key.
Because
that wasn't even the original. By the way, that wasn't even the original anthem.
That wasn't the song they used in the beginning.
No, the original anthem was actually, I think it was "God Bless America," but it was written to "God Save the Queen."
It could be "God Bless America." That was written by what's his name? Not Cole Porter, the other guy, Irving Berlin.
No, what was the tune that was "God Save the Queen"? Was it "America the Beautiful"?
God Save the Queen.
My country, 'tis of thee.
Oh, that one. Yeah, right. Yeah, Sweet Land of Liberty. Tell the story though. Now that we've gone through that. So what happened?
He didn't know. I literally have people who said, "No, it was written during the Civil War," and I said, "Are you kidding me? Well, haven't you ever read the slavery line?" And I said, "Yes, we were under slavery from British rule," and it just dawned on me at that moment. We have no concept of history.
Right.
We have no concept of time. We've lost it. This is why our verbiage is so bad. And listen, I will butcher the King's English
I try not to, and I always apologize when I'm wrong. And when I correct somebody, they get take it personally. I think that stinks, doesn't it?
No, correct me. you know, listen, I said strategy. I said strategy.
Oh, that was just and,
right. Which is, by the way, I was thinking about Bugs Bunny, who used to say, "We got to employ some new strategy."
Yeah,
right?
New strategy. Yeah, 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 yeah.
Or he would say strategy,
yeah,
or something like that. He would say, and so sometimes you get tongue-tied and you say things that you shouldn't say. I mean, people correct me all the time. I once was on LinkedIn and I wrote something, and I misspelled a word, and it didn't come up. And what it was, I was typing really quickly, and I confused my fingers, typed in T-H-E-I-R instead of T-H-E-R-E.
Oh, one of those, yeah.
All right, so... You know, and so the English word, I don't want to use this term, but the English word people who want to just attack you with their blitzkrieg, anyway, came out and
said... Oh, you don't want to use Nazi? You didn't want to say Nazi? Is that it?
Yeah, I didn't want to say that.
Okay, well, let's not say Nazi. Forget it. Don't say it.
Good. All right, so I did a little psychological thing where you can actually transpose the entire letters as long as the first letter and the last letter is... where it's supposed to be, you can transpose letters of any word, and people can understand it and read
right.
it.
Okay.
And I put out the tweet that said, yeah, even though I can't spell, you can clearly understand what I'm saying, so get off my back about how I spelled my words. And I spelled it completely wrong, mm-hmm. but just I made sure the first letter. And I made my point, and I got a whole bunch of people. And the lady said to me, she goes, you know, you're funny, you smart ass. And I was like, well, you know what? There you go. You know what? You're gonna publicly try to embarrass me in front of everybody because I used wrong there, and thank you for doing that.
I take it as a compliment because if my ass is smart, you know, everybody's brains are supposed to be in their head. I got a smart ass too, lady. You should see my left thigh. It's brilliant. Jay Izzo, I-Z-S-O. Quick, so plug a couple of these books, and then we'll just, you and I will talk separately, and I'll, you know, we'll come on again. Here it is. Got Social Mediology, a word that he made up with it's got a wonderful colors on the page, and a coming out of a man's head. You'll love this. You can get it at Amazon. Got Social Mediology.
Yes,
and of course it wasn't even a megapixel. That's I think you get that free with every time you buy Got Social Mediology.
Yeah,
and you got how many? Two more coming. When's the other one coming out? When are they coming out?
We're hoping that these other two come out here in the next 30 days or so. We've got the Social Media Playbook for student athletes and the Social Media Playbook for coaches and administrators. And what we're trying to do is just help young people and coaches understand how to navigate the waters of social media without doing stupid. Because as I say to everyone, regardless of who you are and where you are in life, you do have freedom of speech, but you do not have freedom of consequences. And you need to think about that first.
Ah, spoken like a true Schadenfreudian. Jay Izzo, ladies and germs, you're gonna be on again soon. When the new book comes out or whatever, we'll talk about all sorts of stuff.
You know, even if you feel like, hey, you know, you need somebody just to step in or something like that, let me know.
Yeah, we'll see. Absolutely. Thank you. I'm so glad. Jiggy finally did something good for mankind. He put us together. Now now he's back to being worthless. Thank you, Jay.
Thank you. Appreciate
so much.
You.
Take care.
All right, you too, my friend.
I'm telling you, you got that guy. I'm telling you about that guy. He's good, right? And all sorts of stuff. Did you know who's that?
That's Scatola over there. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I know. We got it there. Schadenfreuden. Jay Izzo. We plugged his books. It was great. Go get his books on Amazon. I'm on Amazon too. Go to the Internet Doctor on Facebook and get a hold of that guy. Get the books and, you know, there might be something you need to do. I know a lot of you people are active on the interweb and you do stuff. Grace, good guy. I'm going to try to get him to come to your town and I'll try to get him to come to my town. I'm not going to get you to come to my town. Schadenfreude. We learned a big one today. Always keep your ears open because somebody's probably telling you something you ought to know. It's just another thing that came to mind. Good night, Mrs. Ernstweil, wherever you may be located. Don't you forget, archived, this show is archived, juicedtalk.com. And next week, we should be here, if all goes well. We talked a lot. Now, I have nothing more to say.